never thought that I had confidence. I never thought that I would have a friend who would keep me, never leave me alone. Jesus, you're my everything, the only one that makes my heart sing. Now I know what real love means, it's everlasting. I never knew I could be so happy. I never knew life be so secure. Because of you, nothing can compare to the joy you bring, an everlasting love affair. Jesus, my life will never be the same. I found someone who truly
now we will have a poem by Marjorie Agosin. Marjorie is a professor of Latin American Studies and Spanish Language at Wellesley College. She has published more than 80 books, including Secrets in the Sand, The Young Woman of Juarez, which addresses the long history of unsolved murders of young maquiladoras in a large Mexican city across the border from El Paso, Texas. In 1955, at the age of 3 months, Agosin moved with her Jewish parents back to their Chilean homeland. Her family fled to the United States during the overthrow of Salvador Allende's government by the U.S.-backed military forces of General Augusto Pinochet. She is the recipient of numerous literature and civil rights awards, including the Dr. Fritz Rettlich Global Mental Health and Human Rights Awards of 2013. Please welcome Marjorie.
Muchas gracias. Everyone speak Spanish? Yes? Okay. Voy a leerles un poema que se llama La Declaración Humana para los Derechos de los Niños. Y este poema, durante la invasión de los Estados Unidos al Irak, se tiró en papelitos junto con la comida, la ayuda humanitaria. Ok. Declaración Humana por los Derechos de los Niños. Nosotros, los niños del universo, exigimos el derecho a jugar en columpios y balancines milagrosos. Nosotros, los niños, exigimos el derecho a mirar al cielo como una mariposa color violeta o como una raya de encaje colorido. El cielo sin polvos amarillos ni helicópteros verdes. Nosotros los niños exigimos el derecho al tiempo, al descanso en una alfombra de hojas, el derecho al sueño de las hadas y los buenos presagios. Nosotros los niños exigimos el derecho a la leche, el chocolate, a los sabores del alma. Nosotros los niños exigimos el derecho a la memoria del maíz, al tiempo sin premura, como un cuerpo que descansa. Nosotros los niños exigimos el derecho a los libros, a los lomos azules que los cubren, al alfabeto, a las palabras, al amor. Nosotros los niños exigimos el derecho a la paz y no a la guerra. No más volantines carmesís, tan solo un cielo limpio, una mano que acaricia y no ata. Nosotros los niños exigimos lápices, cuadernos azules, columpios, para llegar al cielo. Gracias.
Thank you, Marjorie. Now we will have Carlos Alemán speak for us next. Carlos Galván Alemán is an associate professor of communication studies at James Madison University. He also serves as a JMU professor in the residence at Thomas Harrison Middle School, where he develops activities and initiatives that empower minority and underserved students. He is the most proud of collaborative work with partners in the community, notably EMU, towards developing the Shenandoah Valley Scholars Latino Initiative, SLI, for high school Latinos.
Carlos grew up in a small migrant farming town of Selma, California, the seventh of nine children. The pursuit of a doctorate at the University of Iowa took him a long way from his Mexican-American home, but brought him closer to embracing the diversity of Latino cultures. Please welcome Carlos Alemán.
Thank you. A very special thank you to the maestra, Professor Esther Showalter, and the students of the Latino Student Association for inviting me here for this opportunity. I have a little clicker here someplace I got to figure out how to use. Oh, there's one there. Also a special thank you to EMU for being our initial partner school for the Shenandoah Valley Scholars Latino Initiative. 2020, yes, exactly. It was back in 2011, 2012, when a group of students and faculty and administrators and citizens all got together and actually focused on our first three kids there, right? And said, these are kids who have the dream of going to school. And leading that charge was Isabel Castillo, also saying, like, they have to do something so that these kids don't have to do the work that I had to do. And we formed the SLI. We partnered with Dr. Peter Kaufman from UNC Chapel Hill. And EMU was right there. EMU was right there saying, we'll be your partner institution. We'll help provide the vision and the guidance for other schools to follow. Mr. Phil Helmuth and Dr. Ann Waltner are members of the board of directors, and they work tirelessly on SLI. But I also have to thank Dr. Jason Good and Dr. Luke Hartman for their continuous and earnest effort to recruit Latinos from Harrisonburg High and throughout the Valley. And of course, to President Schwarzendruber for championing the idea of a diverse college campus. Something like this. I'm not sure where to point this. There it is. Okay. I went with the recommendation in honor of Hispanic Heritage Month to take some time to reflect on some contemporary communication of Latino identities and what it might mean to relive these traditions of our families and cultures. And as was introduced, I am a professor of communication where I write and teach on the communication of cultural identity. Mostly, I enjoy writing with my wife, Dr. Melissa Alemán. There she is over there. Our autoethnographic work reflects on the communication, ritual, and identity of multicultural and Latino families. We take this not only as a concern for most Americans and people throughout the world, but even on our own family as we negotiate what that means and help our son negotiate what that means, what that identity means. In past publications of the communication of cultural identity, Melissa and I have written on the scholarship. Is that thing running? There we go.
On the
Melissa and I have written on the scholarship and narrative of family, and widely asserted that family stories and personal stories told within families function to socialize members about the rules for behavior and relations. Storytelling defines broad familial and cultural beliefs, norms, and values across cultures, and constructs people's sense of personhood as members of communities. Family stories are often characterized as types of vessels. They're used to transporting and carrying information and talent to remind members of those communities of who we are and who we are not. But the ritualistic telling of stories also communicates how we are and how we are to be. This is a ritual that happens frequently in our household. It's a making tamales or weekend kind of ritual. And you really don't know what it means to be part of our family unless you sit around and you actually cut the menudo, right? Trimming the fat off the menudo and cleaning it up and boiling it. And what's happening during that space is not only the embodied living of the making of the food, but the stories, the dynamic, the laughter, who gets to tell what, who gets to tell when. My brother's hovering in the background. I don't know if you noticed him. He's kind of hovering in the background because usually that's a space reserved for women, with the exception, of course, of my father, who holds the principal seat as the cutter. My mom, you can't see her because she's in the background cleaning and putting up the boiling water. These rituals of doing these rituals of family storytelling become important and are particularly true when we confront the challenges of understanding cultural identities and we test the boundaries of family. My wife, Melissa, likes to say she didn't really feel a sense of community of being part of a family until she was invited to the menudo circle. Marvin captures our sentiment in her description of the power of storytelling for creating family when she wrote on the experiences of storytelling among Indian grandmothers. She writes, "The act of telling stories is more than a gesture of affection and closeness, more than a means of educating children and conveying family values. The telling of stories, the act of using breath and language to narrate an experience, is the confirmation and perhaps even the forging of family connection. In the telling and the listening, the storyteller's essence mingles with that of the listener and this strengthens the bond between the teller and the listener on a sacred level." The practice and tradition of storytelling is important for help us negotiate the messages of culture and identity that are routinely presented to us from societal institutions such as the classroom, but also from the commercial mass media, Coca-Cola. I emphasize the word commercial because we have to always remember that contemporary mass media is a business, and one that succeeds not simply by serving the needs of people, but by creating those needs and by creating a sense of what it means to be a people. Today, I'd like to focus on two commercial campaigns produced by Coca-Cola, reflect on them a bit. I've selected Coca-Cola because of its dominance in the world and in the Americas. You can go just about anywhere in the world, and particularly in Central and Latin America, and you will discover that people not only recognize Coca-Cola as a symbol, but can usually tell you about a lifestyle of the individuals who drink Coke. This is a campaign that was run last May. When was it, March? I'm losing my dates here. Started in March, ran through. It was started by Coke for Mother's Day. And Coca-Cola ran this interactive video that tells a story, or two stories, of a mother and a daughter. And the interactive site allows you to choose which perspective you use. Have any of you seen this video at all? It wasn't viewed very much, but it was one of the starters that got on this road. And I'm going to know if we can kind of start this thing.
Linda manita que tiene el bebé, que linda, que bella, que preciosa es.
Thank you.
just for the sake of the other side, maybe we can watch that again and maybe choose the perspective of the daughter. We can do this again.
Linda manita que tiene el bebé, que linda, que bella, que preciosa es.
Ojalá no fuera mi mamá.
The story itself and ritualistic messages being repeated here are, what we say, polysemic. There's multiple messages here. There's lots to feel good about. There's lots to be concerned about. We have a poignant, dramatic video where the person can choose to see the perspective. Maybe you're a daughter. You don't know how your mom sees things. Maybe you're a mother. You don't know how your daughter sees things. There's a certain valuing that's happening between that mother and daughter relationship. There's images of what we might call a middle class family, which is in contrast to most messages that we might see in the mass media regarding Latinos. It affirms the enduring bond between mother and daughter, united by an unconditional love for children and family, and of course, Coca-Cola. But it also quoted, if you read there, and it's not too said, of young women, pregnant and unmarried, or apparently unmarried. There is the absent father, but the ever-present Coke. And this caused people to have some concern about this. If you missed this one, you wouldn't be the only one. This is one that was just released this week, and it's gonna get a different kind of reading, and maybe you should pay attention to it too.
Mean to be Latina?
Oh my goodness, there's so much.
There's a sense of pride that I don't think any other culture has.
We've always been proud people.
The Reyes name is like a medal of honor.
Garcia is my family name, and there's a legacy and heritage that comes with the name.
I love the name Rodriguez. When I consider my name, I think of my father.
That's my family's business. That's Garcia's barbershop. I've learned everything from my dad, and I'm always trying to strive to impress him.
Santa Maria. I think about, like, dándome la bendición ahí mismo, you know?
Prezes are very ambitious people. They're very family-oriented.
La familia es lo máximo.
Garcias.
Rodriguez.
Ortiz.
It's backwards.
Reyes.
One tattoo my family will move.
I'm proud to be a Perez because we're invincible, we're unstoppable, and we're dreamers.
Reyes means kings. My family comes from royalty.
Behind every name, there's a history, and nothing comes easy for us. Being Latino is pride, it's hard work, It's fighting through the tough times and keeping faith. It's being optimistic. It's loving. It's caring. Orgullosa de ser Pérez. Orgullosa de ser Latina. Orgullosa de tener fe.
I am extremely proud to be who I am, to be me, to be Ortiz. I definitely will never give up my last name. Ortiz must go on. What if I marry a Cooper or something?
My son carries my name, and I hope he has kids, and I want to be a grandfather in little Santa Maria's, you know, running around and stuff.
Orgullosa de ser Ortiz.
Orgulloso de ser Pérez.
Orgulloso de ser Santa Maria.
I'm proud to be Reyes.
Orgulloso de ser Rodriguez.
This is a bit of a much more difficult one to kind of assess. At first glimpse, you watch it and we laugh. We're like, oh gosh, it sounds just like our family. It sounds just like our home. There's a lot of common things that we refer to, right? And, you know, one of those is who we're proud to be, right? We're proud to be parts of family. We're proud to be names, and the naming process and the naming rituals in Latino families is quite extensive. I've got a good story of how we had to name our son and the painstaking effort it took to name our son, to make sure that he had a name that was so that, you know, if you look at me and my wife and you kind of think of our lifestyle, we had to choose a name that would always remind him, right, that he was Latino, and his name is Valerio. And people always mispronounce it, Valeria, Valerio. And he's like, why did you choose that name? And I said, because that's the thing, right? They're always going to mess up your name. And no matter what your education is, you're going to be reminded, right, that that's part of your history as well. You know, I'm definitely, I like this one, right? I'm definitely going to keep my last name. Ortiz must go on, even if I marry a Cooper. And of course, she's not talking about the name Ortiz. She's talking about the culture, right? The culture becomes a code, right? So the last name is code. The last name or family name is code for familia, which in and of itself is code for Latino culture, okay? And there's an implied contrast to American or non-Latinos. In other words, what Latinos mean by familia and what people sometimes mean as family aren't necessarily the same thing. Interesting thing about Coke, though, right? If we look a little bit more carefully at it, right, Coke says the message, we did something for them. We did something for them. That was the Spanish part, if you don't read in Spanish, right? And it's an implied contrast between Coke as non-Latinos and of Latinos as a collective other. And the diversity of Latino people, which you, there are all kinds of different representative peoples there. I mean, you could hear the Puerto Rican accents there, you can hear the Mexican accent, Dominican, you can hear them all there if you were listening carefully. But the diversity of people can be summarized in one thing, and that's family name. And the subtext is that maybe another reading, family name is the one thing that all Latinos can be proud of, which is kind of a different message. The only thing you can be proud of is one thing, your name. Okay. So what's in a name? What's in a Latino name? If we listen to Coke carefully, what's in that name is honor, right? If somebody says, I take it as a medal of honor. What's in that name is a legacy, right? Heritage comes with my name. What's also in the image and the repeated message that we get is patriarchal value, right? The importance of being man, the importance of men's names. And it's over and over and over and over again. The campaign has already come under criticism. Latino Rebels has already come out and said this is pandering. This is outright pandering to Latinos, and it's re-representing Latinos as either working class, the barbershop, or non-working. In other words, we don't really see anybody at work other than the barber. So it's difficult to tell what exactly are we seeing here, right? The idea of Latinos as only being about family honor and protecting that honor becomes amplified. Okay. But probably the most, one of the most gross representations is the idea as Latinos as both tattooed and branded. Tattooed and branded. And branded is the important part, right? If we think about commercial mass media. Branded, as in the Coke logo, branded means your commercialized identities for consumption. But branded also means, like as in the cattle branding, you are property of Coca-Cola. Here's maybe what you missed, because it was only offered once, okay? She said, behind every name, there's a history, and there comes it, nothing comes easy for us. Being Latino is pride, is hard work, it's fighting through tough times and keeping faith, it's being optimistic, it's loving, it's caring, okay? Now, there's a message we can all value, okay? There's a message we can all value. She says, I am proud to be Perez, I am proud to be Latina, I am proud to have faith. Okay. If we think about what it means to relive our Latino identity, it's to say that living is an embodied experience of the world. We know that. But reliving is not simply repeating. Reliving is rather revising, changing, revisioning. It's having an appreciation and a realization of your own authorship in the meaningfulness of living. There's one last one I'm going to show here before we go, and it's probably another clip of Coke that you're not going to see. Okay? It's a clip of Coke that you're not going to see.
I'm very proud of being Garcia, and not only Garcia, but Garcia Medina. In other cultures, people usually just carry like one last name, but in my culture, a lot of people carry two last names. Gabriela Garcia. We're not ashamed to just be alive. And that's something that I learned from my family. Like, my family, when my grandmother calls, I have to hold the phone out here because she talks so loud. I can just pour out my energy and pour out my soul onto my poetry, onto my work. I want to be the world's greatest magician. I don't want to disappear people and then bring them back, and I don't want to pull cute little rabbits out of a hat, no. I want to be a practical magician, a wizard of transformation, shaman, high priestess, curandera, brujita, santera, an inventor of light in the midst of darkness, making something out of nothing. This magic, born from necessity, poured itself into my fingertips like second nature, as if I had a dream that I could master a sewing machine, and what do you know? I woke up the next morning and I knew how to sew, poof, ashe, like magic. Because when we don't have enough of what we need, we make do with what we've got. And yes, life gets rough, but we'll never not have plenty. Passed down from our ancestors who whisper to us gently as we listen intently to the knowledge they have brought. And we grow into magicians, learn to manifest with our thought. As we develop this skill, all obstacles overcome, we make some where there is none, like magic.
Boom.
Orgullosa de ser Latina, orgullosa de ser...
Boom. Watch that one again. That's my sister right there. Okay. That's my sister. She may not have the tattoo, but that's my sister right there. So, thank you for inviting me. I see that we're getting close to going. What I'd like for us to do is to remember a couple of things. Maybe take advantage of the opportunity of Hispanic Heritage Month to relive the traditions of culture and to relive our value of family and certainly relive the promise of faith. Thank you.
Thank you, Carlos. On behalf of LSA, we'd like to officially kick off Latino Heritage Month. And
we also would like to tell you, don't forget that we have delicious coffee and bread after chapel is dismissed. We would also like to let you know that Marjorie's books will be sold in the campus center and they will be signed if you would like to. And just a friendly reminder, our annual banquet is next Friday, so we would really like to see you all there. Thank you.